We have one case this morning, number 23-1746, Scheller versus HHS. Mrs. Tolle, is that the way you pronounce it?
Good morning. May it please the Court, I'm Ann Toll from MCT Law on behalf of Appellant Petitioner. I want to thank the panel initially for rescheduling this oral argument due to my illness. I appreciate that very much. In Sebelius versus Clover, the Supreme Court observed that fees and costs are available in unsuccessful Vaccine Act cases that are not frivolous. Remedial legislation like the Vaccine Act should be construed in a manner that effectuates its underlying spirit and purpose to provide a competent bar to vaccine individuals free of charge. Typically, in cases that lack reasonable basis, the court and or HHS point this out early on in the case. That did not happen here. In fact, HHS initially agreed that good faith and reasonable basis existed and only changed course later at the special master's prompting. The special master and the claims court judge both failed to apply the proper analytical framework for reasonable basis and consider the totality of circumstances, and that was legal error. In Cottingham, this court said, we see no reasoned basis for abandoning the claim court's objective totality of the circumstances inquiry.
What is your primary argument? Is it that the special master erred in making a finding that your triple risk theory was unreasonable, or is it more that there was a legal error in the framework that was used?
The primary argument is a legal error in applying the wrong framework. The totality of circumstances is the correct analytical framework, and here the special master crafted a brand new legal test utilizing the Alfin prongs and weighing evidence.
Help me understand how the Alfin factors are different than the totality of circumstances.
Okay, thank you for that question. Well, Alfin did not exist at the time the Vaccine Act was enacted, for one thing. The totality of circumstances analysis is much broader than the Alfin prongs. The Alfin prongs are evidence of causation that would be, it's tantamount to requiring an expert report to have evidence on each of the Alfin prongs. A totality of circumstances analysis considers other things outside of the evidentiary record, such as feasibility of a claim and novelty. This court spoke of the factor novelty in Cottingham. And so novelty of a claim would not be something that would be part of the Alfin prongs per se, but it's still a relevant consideration.
Can the totality of circumstances include something that's not evidentiary in nature, like literature and things of that nature?
Yes. So the totality of circumstances test is very broad. And the claims court, in describing the totality of circumstances test, specifically criticized Special Master Moran's application of a strict evidentiary test, and as early as the Tristano case, which was decided by the then Chief Judge Campbell Smith. And she stated that she declined to his invitation to supplant the current reasonable basis test that's informed by a totality of the circumstances with a reasonable basis test that turned solely on evidentiary standards, because such a rigid position was at variance with the flexible structure of the Vaccine Act. So yes, the flexible evidentiary rules that apply or don't apply, as the case may be, in the vaccine program, the totality analysis encompasses looking at medical literature, like you noted, package inserts, informal consults with an expert, like what happened here. Two different experts were consulted about this claim. The first was Dr. Akbari, an immunologist, who did research and then indicated that this vaccine was associated with infant deaths, and that Dutch authorities had pulled the vaccine to further investigate that. And then Dr. Miller, who, as you noted, was the proponent of the triple risk model in the Boatman case, had also been consulted, and as much as gave a supportive expert opinion via email to trial counsel.
Okay, well, into the weeds on that.
Okay.
And let's talk about the Alfin test. I know you think that shouldn't be the exclusive test, but certainly if you have a reasonable basis for each of the Alfin prongs, then there's a reasonable basis for the claim. So on the first Alton prong, which is a triple risk model, there's no, the special master is a bit equivocal about whether that was satisfied, ultimately, I guess, concluding that it wasn't. But you have something here, it seems to me, that is a bit stronger than Boatman in that you have testimony by Dr. Akbari that Scheller was found to be anamnestic, which is enhanced reaction to vaccines, which supports the notion that the vaccine could be the kind of stressor that fits within the triple risk model. So it seems to me maybe you have a pretty reasonable case about prong one, okay? But let's talk about prong, and special master found you'd satisfied prong three. So let's just talk for a moment about prong two. What happened in Boatman, similar to perhaps this case, is that there was a reliance on a statistical model to show brain abnormality. The 50 to 70% of the SIDS victims have this brain abnormality. And of course, in Boatman, we found that that was not sufficient. But here, Dr. Miller suggested right before the adverse decision in Boatman that there be further investigation into brain samples to see if there was a brain abnormality. Do you rely on the possibility of identifying a brain abnormality and coming within the triple risk factor as supporting a reasonable basis here?
So yeah, that I agree with everything that you said. And so Dr. Miller did want, as he would in any case, to examine all available brain tissue in the hopes of finding evidence that would support, other than the statistical inference that the brain stem abnormality was present, like what was required in Boatman. Unfortunately, in this case, as often is the case, that part of the brain tissue was never available for further testing. So he did look at brain tissue, but
not available. I'm confused about that because there was a subpoena to get the brain tissue, which was granted. You had difficulty getting the authorities to comply with the subpoena, but wasn't that a possibility that the subpoena could be enforced to get the sample?
Ultimately, the law enforcement agency in California and even the county attorney's office and the state attorneys or whichever it was, I can't recall exactly, but I was the one that was dealing with those entities, and they're in the end, after expressing a lot of unwillingness to go in the cooler and take out the things, that they essentially said there is no other brain tissue besides what we've already cut new samples from and given to you previously.
So when did that happen?
I don't know exactly. I'm sorry about that. But that was always part of the idea was to obviously strengthen the triple risk theory, but also to look for potentially other brain abnormalities that could have evidenced an encephalopathy or some other type of issue. But so to answer your question about prong two, the evidence in this case regarding the brain stem abnormality is not present, and so the statistical analysis would be this is the argument on prong two, the same as in Boatman. And although that was ultimately not successful at the merits level in Boatman, that same statistical argument regarding the brainstem abnormality, which must have been there essentially for the child to die in this way, does give rise to reasonable basis on prong two, because this is a much lower burden than the merits decision on prong two.
Yeah, and in Boatman, the counsel got attorney's fees.
That's true. And not only that, but other cases that were also in the pipeline following Boatman, which is similar to all the cases in the autism omnibus hearing. 5,000 cases got attorney's fees after those test cases were decided. And even now, people once in a while still bring an autism case, and then they're warned, like, hey, we've already been down this road. We're not going to pay you in these cases. And that's fair. But It's not fair in a case like this, which has a viable case and the same expert supporting the case that had succeeded in front of Special Master Gowan. Certainly, you wouldn't bring a case like this now without a new expert or a new medical theory. But this case was still pending when this case was filed, and counsel appropriately dismissed this case as soon as this court decided Boatman. And that, so this is like Pereira, essentially, where the case had a reasonable basis at the outset and only lost a reasonable basis when the expert opinion was no longer viable or wasn't going to carry the day. And that's why the case was dismissed at that point. I might also add that 7 of the 8 special masters are applying the totality of circumstances test, and Judge Schwartz's concerns in this case that that will lead to rampant abuses in attorney's fees is simply unfounded.
The special master in this case requested additional arguments and briefing, right?
Yes.
And was that on the reasonable basis issue? Or did that focus on the... the Althans test?
No, I don't think so. For a couple of years, we litigated reasonable basis at the trial court level, and we had a 3-hour oral argument. But I don't think that procedurally, I think that Cottingham, the claims court decision in Cottingham, I believe happened
I guess I'm intrigued as if there's no reasonable basis, then why have additional argument and why have additional briefing? On the other hand, it seems that if you're going to have oral argument and additional briefing, that at least there's a reasonable reason for that. And to what extent does that go to showing a reasonable basis?
Well, as I said earlier, respondent did not challenge reasonable basis in this case. In many cases, they do, or they sometimes defer to the special master if they don't want
to. The secretary didn't challenge originally.
No, they didn't. They were prompted, perhaps even goaded, into doing so, to be fair. I see that my time...
Let me ask you one last question. What, in your view, what is it that changed the secretary's mind to oppose...
The special master's insistence that they take a position, and also he's been somewhat...
I'm sorry, the special master's what?
The special master's insistence that they take a position. He required that they take a position one way or the other.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Bishop?
Good morning. May it please the court. The U.S. Court of Claims opinion and order sustaining the special master's decision denying attorneys fees and costs should be affirmed.
Why should attorneys fees be denied here when they were granted in Boatman and other Boatman-like cases?
I think that each case needs to stand on its own, and here there was no expert evidence, there was no medical evidence.
It's the same as Boatman, isn't it? In fact, perhaps a little stronger because of the Akbari testimony. This is not a weaker case than Boatman, is it?
I would say that it is. Dr. Miller actually did provide a report opining on the merits there. Here, he merely offered to write a report, and he admitted...
Can I ask you, does it make a difference that he wrote an email versus a report? You would have had them continue on with the case and have all the expense of the report? Obviously, if he's going to write a report, he said in his email, he can write a report based on the very theory that was in Boatman. So why should it matter that he hadn't written it yet at the time that it was determined that theory was no longer viable, and then they quickly abandoned the case?
I think what's key here is that he admitted in his email that this was a classic SIDS case, and at best he could offer the same theory as in Boatman, but he also admitted there is no physical evidence. I cannot apply the theory because there's no evidence of a structural abnormality, necessary.
No. In Boatman, the theory was the statistical model, which would exist here just as in Boatman. There's no difference, right?
It is the same theory, but each special master would be entitled to decide that. And at the time this case was filed, Special Master Gowan's decision in Boatman was, it was one outlier case. Four other decisions rejected Dr. Miller's theory.
Okay, but what I'm trying to figure out is why is this case weaker than Boatman? I'm not seeing that. You said, well, he didn't actually write a report. As Judge Stoll has pointed out, that shouldn't make a difference. Is this case in any way weaker than Boatman?
I'm not familiar with all of the litigation in Boatman and all of the evidence presented, but what I would maintain is that the evidence presented here was ultimately a complete dearth of medical records that insinuated vaccine causation.
Well, they were turning to rely on the statistical model, which is exactly what happened in Boatman.
I think what's ultimately important, though, is that this court found the theory in Boatman as a matter of law, unsound, unreputable, unreliable.
That was after they filed their case, right? That's after their filing. When do we look at whether a party had a reasonable basis? Is it at the end of the case? Is it at the beginning of the case?
I think it's a consistent query, but what I would say is that this, as the CFC had said, it's not necessarily reasonable to rely on an erroneous decision merely because it hasn't been reversed yet. And here...
But how were they to know that it was an erroneous decision if it hadn't been reversed yet? I mean, there's a sentence in the opinion that also says, a petitioner cannot justify an unreasonable causation theory in one case with the theory's acceptance in another case. And that really goes to Judge Dyke's question, which I have the same one. How is this any different than Boatman? So maybe in a situation where the facts are the same, or maybe the facts here are even better, this sentence doesn't make a lot of sense to me. What do you think of that sentence?
Well, I think that Boatman is still one case outweighed by these other cases that counsel had an independent duty to evaluate. And there were readily apparent flaws even at the special master level.
But in Boatman itself, we criticized the Court of Federal Claims for relying on other cases as somehow taking a vote as to what the result should be.
But I think that if we're considering Boatman to be evidence that we can consider under a reasonable basis standard, then the other judicial evidence out there, those circumstances matter too. And I think it's only validating that this court didn't find that Boatman had a viable theory. And I think that one thing about the CFC's decision is that came 2 months after the petition filed in this case. It wasn't
Let's look at the time frame here. Isn't it the case that that the case was dismissed once the Boatman opinion came out?
Once the Federal Circuit decision came out, but not not the CFC decision 2 months after the petition was filed. And
once the Federal Circuit opinion came out, then they dismissed. So aren't we looking at a reasonable basis from the time that the lawsuit was filed up to the point of dismissal and no further than that? Up until that point, wasn't it reasonable for them to rely on evidence that was also being presented and heard in Boatman?
But I think that is still a subjective consideration. And if we look at Simmons, Cottingham, and James Cornelius as the triumvirate of reasonable basis case law.
But we're looking at a totality of circumstances. Why do you think that we would not be able to consider reliance on expert testimony in another case as reasonable basis?
I think perhaps perhaps considering the theory itself.
Because we have held in our other cases that the absence of a medical opinion is not dispositive of a reasonable basis.
Right, but here Scheller dismissed because Dr. Akbari could not provide an opinion.
Right,
Scheller had to make
sure. So we're looking at attorney's fees from the time that the lawsuit was filed up until dismissal. You want to hang the appellant on things that occurred after they dismissed.
But I think that Scheller always had a duty to investigate the claims here, and 11 other SIDS cases, independent of Dr. Miller's theory, which was rejected in four decisions.
That can't be the standard of review for us.
I don't think...
This numerical game that, you know, how many went this way and how many went that way.
Right.
Is it true that in the other 11 cases, even though they rejected the SIDS theory, they granted attorney's fees?
I'm not sure the status. Attorney's fees is something the government rarely goes after. I mean, it's really not a sword. It's a shield that we try not to use federal dollars for unreasonable claims. And it's something we take very seriously. We don't challenge it often. As, you know, Ms. Toll has explained, we didn't originally challenge it in this case. And when probed by the special master to consider everything available, we did change our position with fair notice. And that particular idea about this fairness is not, whether that's fair, was addressed by the CFC and is not an objection before this court today.
So what's the legal substantive difference between the totality of circumstances framework and the Alton's test?
I think that Alton is merely one way to construe it. I think it comports. It's a reasonable way to go about it.
No, I asked you the difference. What's the legal substantive difference between Alton's and totality of circumstances?
The burden of proof. Alton requires preponderance. But what Alton does, it's synonymous with causation in our program, and has been for 20 years.
So would you agree that the Alton's test is an evidentiary framework?
It is, and I think that comports.
And then reasonable basis is not. It could be. You could include law, but it includes other things other than evidence and law, correct?
I think consistent with Simmons, Cottingham, and James Cornelius, it's an objective inquiry based on objective evidence.
Yes, but it's not a pure evidentiary test.
I think that it is. Reasonable basis is.
You think it's pure evidentiary?
I think that there could be circumstances like Boatman, like considering things that are extraneous to the record.
If that's the case, why do we have the totality of circumstances, which this court has upheld?
I think that totality of the circumstances can be confusing, and this case is a good example of why, because we start looking at these things that are extraneous to the record. But really, I think a better, more aptly term would be the totality of the objective evidence, because it's not rigid. It's not that each prong must be met.
If you had a magic wand, would you do away with the totality of circumstances framework?
I would rename it the totality of the objective evidence to comport with the case law. And I think that that is consistent with the Act, because Congress separated good faith, which is understood as subjective, from a reasonable basis for the claim.
And how would you weigh that evidence then? By the Alton's test?
I think that it makes good sense to do it that way, but it's not required.
So you said a moment ago that not every prong of Alton must be met to have a reasonable basis, correct?
I don't understand that to necessarily be true, but I would struggle to see that, you know, for example, if you don't have even more than a mere scintilla to support a theory, I don't know what the significance of the clinical records might be then if there's no theory to connect to events.
I don't think you're quite answering my question. You said a moment ago, if I understood you correctly, that not every prong of Alton must be met for a reasonable basis. Is that correct?
I think it would, again, depend on the circumstances of the case, and we would have to look at maybe there's very strong treater statements or very strong medical records show something, and maybe there's weaker evidence on the...
So your answer is yes in some circumstances. Is that your answer? I mean, it seemed like a reasonable statement. You did just make it, and you said not all prongs have to be met for a reasonable basis. So why are you backtracking?
I still think it really depends on each case, a case-by-case determination.
Understand. Maybe you have a different view in this case, but is it a yes or a no? Does do it for a reasonable basis under the totality of circumstances test, in your view, do all prongs of Alton have to be met?
I think they should be, but I don't think that it's necessarily required.
Okay. Can a special master consider material outside the record?
So, section
medical literature?
Medical literature can. I think that is objective evidence. Again, I think it would
be... It doesn't have to be medical literature introduced by a claimant, right? A petitioner. It can be medical literature that the special master is aware of. Maybe they get a subscription to, you know, I don't know, to some magazine, and we can they consider that?
I would try to caution the special master to limit it to the record evidence, and Section 13 specifies that the record is what's created by the special master. And I think the special master has discretion to ask for certain literature to, and it is a specialized vaccine proceeding. The special master has immense discretion and has acquired specialized knowledge.
And it's the special master that creates the record.
Correct. I mean, with input from the parties, of course, but it is, you know, we've suspended normal discovery rules and evidence rules.
In your view, the special master can consider information or materials outside of the record, and can go out and gather things.
I'm not sure that he could do that before or after rendering, you know, in conjunction with rendering an opinion. It would need to be part of the record he's considering. Otherwise, I mean, I think that might be a due process issue. I think considering case law makes sense because that's public and available to everyone. I think depending on what the... I think that, you know, it might be a better course for the special master to invite medical literature on a topic.
Maybe it would be a due process, but it certainly would be an abuse of discretion.
Perhaps.
If we were to conclude that this case is exactly like Boatman, or perhaps a little stronger, would it be error to deny attorney's fees?
I think that Boatman came at a different time. And again, I'm not familiar with every piece of evidence in the Boatman record, but I think that we need to individually look at this case, and this case had almost no evidence in support of it.
No, but you're not answering my question. If we conclude that this is just like Boatman, should attorney's fees have been awarded the way they were in Boatman itself?
I think that begs the question, should attorney's fees have been raised in Boatman?
What's the answer? You may not agree that the hypothetical is relevant, but assume that assume my hypothetical. What's the answer?
I still don't think that another case can dictate this case.
Just assuming hypothetically that this case is the exact same as Boatman. I think that's the, just assume that, because your answer seems to take away that assumption every time you answer. So assume for a minute that it's the exact same case. Would it be error to not allow attorney fees, grant attorney fees?
I'm not sure. I'm sorry, Your Honor. I do think I don't know whether attorney's fees were reasonably awarded in Boatman, and I think that's a fair question. They were, but I don't know. You know, if I had been counsel, perhaps I'd have challenged fees there, or perhaps, you know, I do think it was a much earlier filed case, and the current landscape matters.
Okay. Thank you. We're out of time.
Thank you.
Ms. Tolle, am I butchering your name again?
It's Toll. T-O-L-E, Toll. It's a lot of vowels.
We're changing our form so we get phonetic spellings of counsel's name.
So I just wanted to touch on just a brief point that I didn't address earlier. And that is the which evidence should be analyzed in the reasonable basis analysis. There's a case from the claims court called Good Game, and that case is procedurally different than our case because in that case that was tried on the merits, so naturally the record was complete. In this case, additional evidence was submitted in support of reasonable basis after the dismissal. And I would submit to the court that there is nothing in the Vaccine Act that limits the evidence that can be...
I'm not sure that I understand how that evidence that the special master declined to consider helped you. I don't really see in your brief any description of what's in that literature which is helpful to you.
Right, so that's a fair point. The literature that was introduced in this case in the fees litigation is all of the literature from the Beaumont case. It's hard to maybe contextualize or understand without the expert report, but it lines up with the evidence from that case. But I do think it's important just to point out, though, because there is the good game decision, and that's influencing special master's rulings, that there's not a prohibition in the Vaccine Act to introduce additional evidence in the attorney's fees phase. And that's in contrast to a statute like AJA, which does have a specific provision. It's 28 U.S.C. 2412D, and that provides that whether a party is entitled to attorney's fees under AJA is determined by examining, quote, the record which is made in the civil action. So the government cannot introduce additional evidence of substantial justification. And so the argument then is without Congress specifying something like that in the Vaccine Act, then you can presume that there's no such prohibition in vaccine litigation. And so unless there's any other questions, I did want to say that regarding Simmons and the subjective versus objective dichotomy, certainly the existence of Boatman and the theory that was advanced there and the ruling in Boatman, those are all objectively verifiable facts, like we noted in our
I think the argument that I often hear, and I think that was made here, is that while that may be objective, the attorney's interpretation of that is somehow subjective, and that kind of overpowers any objective nature of the matter.
Well, certainly whatever an attorney thinks or does will necessarily be subjective, but in the same way as in Rule 11 sanction case law exists, and that case law looks at the actions of the attorney through an objective lens, so of the reasonable attorney. And so you can do the same here. And I see my time's up. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. Tull. Thank you, Ms. Bishop. The case is submitted. That concludes our session for this morning.